And we are joined on the scoop today by Cal Soderquist of the Timberwolves Radio Network. Cal, thanks for joining the show today.
You bet, Seth. Thanks for having me.
A big win for the Wolves last night over the Los Angeles Clippers, 123-109. Cal, definitely one that the Wolves needed just to kind of pick up their spirits after a couple of tough losses to the Spurs and the Rockets over the weekend. But the Wolves came out with some urgency on offense, it seemed like, early in the game, and they were able to put the Clippers away with a big third quarter.
Yeah, I mean, they were, you know, the Clippers were hanging around at half, like you said, but the Wolves really looked like a desperate team and a team playing at home that knew kind of the magnitude of what that game would mean if they were to lose that one and drop their third straight. It was good to see sort of the balanced offensive attack from Minnesota. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns had a double-double with 30 points. Andrew Wiggins had a pretty efficient 27. And even Jeff Teague poured in 20 to go along with 12 assists. So they were moving the ball, and kind of what has been the successful recipe since Jimmy Butler's gone down is, you know, a sprinkle of this and that from several different players. It hasn't had to fall on one guy or even two guys, and that's been what's worked. And the Clippers were a team that also felt that desperation and that urgency. They're trying to chase down Minnesota for one of those playoff spots. And after the loss now, the Clippers are, I think, three games back of that final spot, or three games back of Minnesota at the very least. And it was a huge win for the Wolves to be able to put some more distance between themselves and those teams nipping at their heels.
Cal, I had a chance to go to the Wolves-Rockets game on Sunday night and see that in person, and just so many things that Houston does to show why they're the top team in the West. But I thought the most interesting thing that they did was predominantly putting James Harden defensively on Taj Gibson. And Gibson had a very quiet night against the Rockets, which really we don't see that much. But that, you look at what happened with the game defensively and with him being in foul trouble, it shows just how big of an impact he is both offensively and defensively for this team.
Yeah, that's kind of it's a unique strategy that Houston has employed throughout the year, really. It's not, you know, they move away from it if they have to, but if they like the size of that opposing four, that power forward, and Taj Gibson is, you know, a great player in this league and does so many things for this Wolves team, but he is a little bit undersized and still has an advantage over a guy like James Harden. But what the Rockets like to do is put Harden on that guy. Then Harden doesn't have to follow around a perimeter player. And, you know, the West is riddled with good guards, whether it's point guards or twos. And instead, you're almost baiting the opposing team into trying to go to that mismatch. And now maybe Taj Gibson can muscle his way to a couple buckets. And like you said, he struggled at times on Sunday. And what it does is, Mike D'Antoni has said as much, they're fine with their opponent trying to go down to the post and slowly grind their way out for, you know, tough contested two-point shots, whether it's a hook shot or a turnaround. And there are plenty of capable guys, whether it's Clint Capella or anyone else for Houston, that can sort of come over and help Harden if that is a bigger guy or a guy who's a little more skilled and polished down their scoring. But as we know with the Rockets, they can tally up the threes pretty quickly, so they're pretty happy trading those low-percentage two-point shots for their good looks they get from three more often than not.
Even though the Wolves didn't end up getting a win in that game, how important was that comeback for them? Houston had as much as a 25-point lead throughout the game, and the Wolves able to cut it down to a 5-point deficit, just showing that they can, even if they're down early against some of these top teams, can still battle back to get it close.
Yeah, I think it was very important because, you know, you said you were there and you saw it, and I'm sure even fans watching on TV or listening heard that it was just kind of a flat start for the Wolves. And it was very concerning because that just like last night, that was a game that they really needed. And obviously the odds were stacked against them playing against the top team in the league. But you needed to come out and show that urgency. And for those first 24 minutes, it just didn't seem to be there for this Wolves team. And they were on the second end of a back-to-back, and they got beat the night before down in Texas. So there were a lot of things going against them on Sunday. But to come out in the second half and play inspired and show that effort, I think not only did that reassure all of us who were watching that this team still did have fight left in them, but I think it even sort of inspired some confidence or reignited some confidence in this team that, hey, if we can mount this comeback against some of the best in the league, we can take care of business here in these final 11, now 10 games against lesser opponents when you're comparing them to teams like Houston.
Cal, I want to jump to the NBA in general here for a second, and this situation with Cavaliers head coach Tyronn Lue, certainly concerning as he's stepping away from the team to give himself some time to figure out some health concerns that he's going through. But I thought it brought out kind of a very honest and just surprising almost answer from Taj Gibson when he was asked if he has concerns about the way Coach Thibodeau handles things with this team. And Taj, I thought, was refreshingly honest in that he says he worries about Tibbs quite a bit, in that he hopes that nothing happens in a similar case, but with as much energy as he puts into this team, he worries that something similar could happen here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's not even just Tibbs. Obviously, Tibbs is a guy who, among other NBA coaches, is one of the more visibly intense guys, especially during a game. But behind the scenes, there are several other coaches in this league who put in the hours and, you know, go without the regular recommended sleep hours and instead are putting that toward film or diagramming plays. You think back to Steve Clifford, a good friend of Tom Thibodeau's, who had to leave his team for a while earlier this season for similar reasons. And even Doc Rivers, the Clippers head coach, yesterday we got to talk to him about it at Shoot Around for a little bit, and you know, he admitted that it's just a tough deal because these coaches, they pour a lot of time and dedication into these teams, and they come to love their players like family. And they really live and die on every single possession. I think that's why we see coaches picking up technicals in the first quarter and really upset about missed calls or things going against their team. And Doc just kind of admitted that they have to try to keep it in perspective. He, too, last year, for a short stretch, had basically come across an illness that was really getting after him, and he lost some weight, and he only missed a couple games, but it continued to plague him for several weeks. And sort of looking back with hindsight, he admitted that he should have stepped away for a couple weeks and really taken the time. But he also admitted that as a head coach, it's tough because you're the boss, and your assistants or even your training staff are sometimes hesitant to tell you, hey, you got to step away and take care of yourself, because the coach is just so willing and ready to bury himself into everything and probably is not going to take no for an answer very easily. So it's a sticky deal, but hopefully as it becomes more of the norm for these NBA head coaches, if needed, to sort of step away for a temporary hiatus, that it becomes more acceptable and these guys can start to take care of themselves like they need to.
Cal, just looking at some of the numbers from last night's game, Derrick Rose again providing a spark. He had 9 points in 7 minutes, but unfortunately, sounds like he suffered a little bit of an ankle injury in last night's game. And that's unfortunate because Rose, the past couple of games, really seems like he has been able to get his legs back underneath him and has really provided a good spark offensively.
Yeah, it seemed like his comfort level has really improved since first coming here, and I think he was trying to find his way with some of those second unit teammates that he shares the floor with, and he looks much more comfortable out there. You know, the San Antonio game, he played well. You mentioned a little bit of the Houston game as well, and it was pretty unfortunate that, you know, he had things clicking the last couple games. He had done some things well last night. And then that ankle injury, the only update we got post-game was that he'll be day-to-day. So nothing too severe. He obviously was not able to return last night. But kind of the good news, the silver lining, is that the team now has a couple days to either rest and or practice and see how D. Rose is feeling before they head out east and for the next game on Friday. But they're going to need him. They're going to need all hands on deck as they continue kind of this stretch run. And like we said, you know, he seemed to really kind of find a groove and find a comfort level amongst that second unit. So hopefully he's back soon.
I saw one note from after the game last night, and just wanting to make sure that it is in fact accurate, because it seems a little crazy, but the Wolves last night in getting to that 41-31 mark have clinched their first winning or first 500 or better season since the 2004-2005 campaign, and that just seems insane. But that's kind of where the Wolves have been at, and it really shows how good they have been this season, despite a very tough Western Conference.
Yeah, I think they're eager to get that one more win at least, so you can say it's the first winning season. Excuse me, but you're right. You go back to 2004-2005, and that was obviously 1 year after that great Western Conference Finals run, and kind of the year that after they didn't live up to those expectations, the year following that, everything kind of started to go south. You know, Kevin Garnett was traded shortly after that, and we obviously remember the years and years of lottery positions and dozen win seasons. So it's great to see the team get this far. But Tom Thibodeau even mentioned it last night that this is just kind of one step in a process where obviously you want to have a winning season, but then you want that winning season to equal the playoffs, and you want the playoffs to equal potentially some fun games on your home floor, maybe even a home court advantage. Now, that looks like it may be pretty tough to accomplish this year, but really they have this long-term plan laid out, and at least, you know, with this 41st win, they've kind of checked off the first half step of what they want this to start to look like on a long-term basis.
Cal, looking at this East Coast swing, Friday the Wolves will take on the New York Knicks, who are well below 500. They are without Kristaps Porzingis, the core of their team. So they're just, at this point, kind of trying to see who else they can build around going into next year. And then you get a chance to see the Philadelphia 76ers, as the Wolves will play them on Saturday. In terms of expectations for this two-game swing, looks pretty likely that the Wolves can win Friday and then can contend on Saturday, but the Wolves have had some trouble with the Eastern Conference, especially on the road here this season.
That's exactly what I was going to say, that you can't really, as much as you'd like to say there are easy wins, that's really only on paper, because A, obviously we've seen Minnesota struggle, whether it was the Brooklyn Nets on the road, the Atlanta Hawks on the road. Some of these stick out, and these are obviously bottom feeder teams that for whatever reason Minnesota had trouble with. And the Knicks would fit that profile now. Like you mentioned, no more Porzingis. They're a team very much focused on their status in the NBA draft lottery. But at the same time, whenever you're a team playing at home and you've got professionals on your roster who could be playing for a roster spot next year or auditioning basically to get picked up elsewhere, they'll have the fans behind them. The fans might be eager to see their home team sort of spoil the playoff hopes of the team that's coming in. And that's kind of going to be the case. Either, like you mentioned, you're going to go against some playoff clubs here like the Sixers in these final 10 games. Otherwise, it's going to be teams like New York. The Memphis Grizzlies and Atlanta Hawks are in town next week, and those are both teams that definitely don't have playoff aspirations, but will still have those similar motivations of the Knicks, where they're either trying to spoil some things or they're just trying to make a name for themselves going into a summer of free agency. So Minnesota's really still got to take it one game at a time. They came out of this really brutal stretch of elite opponents still in this playoff picture and with a pretty good chance to seal things up in these final 10, but they really still need to take it just one game, one opponent at a time, and try to take care of business.
Cal, one more to finish up here today. It would be fitting that we finish on a little March Madness, as that has certainly been a fitting title for what has happened here opening weekend for the NCAA tournament. There are still plenty of top teams alive in the field, including Duke, which I'm sure makes Tyus Jones very happy, and then Kentucky as well. I'm sure a lot of the guys get pretty involved in March Madness, but how much fun is it to see them be able to just kind of interact with each other as their teams go further and further?
Yeah, it's fun when you get into the locker room after games, especially after wins, and you know, they obviously have TV setups in there, and last weekend, I'm sure that they would throw on, I've been in there in years past where they toss on those games, and you look around that locker room, you mentioned a guy like Cat, who was on that historic Kentucky team that did come up short in the NCAA tournament, but posted quite a great undefeated record in the regular season. Tyus had that national championship. Even a guy like Gorgui Dieng won a title with Louisville. So they all kind of get excited when their teams play each other, and then as some of the teams, the alma maters, get knocked out, they'll adopt certain teams just to maybe go against some of their teammates, and it's all in good fun. And like you said, there are still some. I think it would have to be in the championship for a Cat versus Tyus matchup, but that would be a ton of fun. Duke and Kentucky. Otherwise, there might be some other possibilities as well. But even if it's not an alma mater, you best believe these guys, they have it on and they're watching it, A, because it's basketball, and B, because it wasn't too long ago for many of them that they were at least competing in a tournament like this. I guess we should mention Andrew Wiggins, too, with Kansas still around. So we could see a Kansas-Duke matchup, I think, as soon as the Elite Eight. And how much fun would that be? Not just for those two schools, but for those two players too. So they love it. They get glued to it just like we do. I think they fill out brackets. A lot of them do, just like we do. It's just maybe a little bit different where it's the bracket pool loser has to buy a nice dinner for the team the next time they're on the road. And luckily, we don't have to risk that much when we do our office pools. But it's still just as much fun for everyone.
Absolutely. Cal, great stuff today talking Timberwolves basketball. We'll see if the Wolves can complete the sweep in that little East Coast swing and see if they can climb their way up the Western Conference standings a little bit as we draw closer to playoff time.
I agree. Sounds good, Seth. Anytime.